Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So yesterday, some good things came out of yesterday, to be honest. The first and foremost, Scott Walker to the curb. Here in Pennsylvania, Scott Wagner, the golf spikes hit somebody. It just wasn't Tom Wolf. And if you look at, the governor race in Michigan, Wisconsin, here in Pennsylvania, that blue wall that Trump had kind of cracked. And again, I go back to the voter theft of 2016 with all the voter ID nonsense in Michigan and in Wisconsin. And I'm going, you know what? Maybe the Trump method, going to find out. But also, look, Illinois, goodness, out with Bruce Rauner. Here to share some thoughts on yesterday's events, on what it was, and to talk about his new book, a great book. I've got Greg Sargent. He is the author of An Uncivil War, Taking Back Our Democracy in an Age of Trumpian Disinformation and Thunderdome Politics. Greg, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me on.
So, I guess, first reactions out of yesterday.
Well, look, I mean, for progressives, there were a lot of disappointments. Gillum losing in Florida, Stacey Abrams apparently losing in Georgia. Those were young, dynamic, leaders who would have really been great governors and would have, changed the South in important ways. But I think overall, you got to be pretty happy with what happened in the House. I mean, the one thing that needed to happen to prevent our political system from sliding into really serious peril happened. The most important thing we need right now is a check on this out of control president. Yep. And his corruption, authoritarianism, and now we're going to get that.
No,
that's not to say that he won't do any damage.
Oh, he's going to do tons of damage. I mean, we're going to see a lot of executive orders and more crazy right-wing extreme judges being packed onto our courts. I mean, there's going to be damage, but at least there's going to be some accountability and someone, at least someone, attempting to hold them in check.
Right. And I think the Senate was always going to be tough for Democrats.
Yep.
You may recall that last year, I think Republicans were talking about how they had such a great map that they were going to get a filibuster-proof majority out of it. Now, that obviously didn't happen. I guess they picked up two seats or three. We'll see what happens here. But that was always going to happen. I think it would have been really tough to prevent losses in the Senate. And the strategy that they put in place to win in those red states, having Trump out there, banging away at the xenophobia and hate messaging, really, I think, cost them in the House in critical ways. I mean, we're starting to see more of these more marginal districts fall to Democrats even now. It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, the hope is that at least there's some still sanity in the Republican Party. And looking at this and going, look, this isn't the country that we are. And, I woke up this morning going, because I've been saying, on Wednesday morning, we're going to know what kind of a country we've got. And we're still divided. But, I look at a lot of the stuff, a lot of the extreme, I think we pushed back on that.
Well, I think we saw a majority assert itself in response to Trump. Now, look, it was in some respects a divided decision, but they did gain in the Senate, and they showed that this type of hate messaging and xenophobic panic really, drives the Republican base into a really energized state, and that's what they needed to do to really put these red seats, to put these red states out of play for Democrats. But at the same time, in the House, a majority, a multiracial majority rose up and said, no to this president, we're not doing this, and there will be a check on you. And I think that's an important message to the country and the world, really.
No, absolutely. But, the reality, and for all my friends who are kind of glum and down because they were expecting this massive blue wave, we were going to take the House and the Senate, and it was going to just be this utopian election. I'm going, no, the map, the pathway to that was virtually impossible. And I think it was PBS who put out a story that said, the map for Democrats, especially in the House races, hasn't been this gerrymandered since, like 1914. I mean, the deck was stacked, and still the Democrats took the House. And also the Senate seats, look, I mean, what was it? There were the Republicans, you know, the Democrats were, you know, had more that they had to defend that were in areas that Trump won. I mean, look, I'm happy with how things turned out. I think it's moving us in the right direction.
Yeah, and the gerrymandering is even only just part of it, although that's extremely serious. Now, also, I mean, Democrats were fighting in a lot of Republican districts.
Yep.
And the Democratic strategy was to put as many in play as possible. And I think it's worth pointing out that the very reason that that was possible is because of the backlash to Trump. What had to happen is they had to really contest as many districts as possible, and I believe they were playing in maybe 80 districts. And for that to happen, you need quality candidates who are willing to take a chance and run in very tough territory around the country. You need lots and lots of money pouring out from the grassroots. And you need lots and lots of volunteers. And all that was really fueled by the anti-Trump backlash. And that kind of thing is what makes it possible to kind of pull off these surprises in weird places. You need to play everywhere, and that can only happen if you really have a great deal of energy, and Trump supplied that.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, yeah, the Democrats, you know, need to have good candidates and infrastructure, which I think this election cycle brought some good candidates out and started building infrastructure in places where there had never been. And I look where I live in central Pennsylvania. You know, the 10th, you know, congressional district was highly competitive. It's never been competitive in the years that I've lived here, and it was highly competitive. In fact, Pennsylvania, you know, went from a 6 to 12 Republican, you know, dominated congressional delegation to a 9-9 delegation, to where, and look, four women, where we had none before, and now you got four.
Well, I think the story in Pennsylvania is really fascinating from the gerrymandering perspective.
Yep.
I mean, you know, that state was gerrymandered as badly as any other, and because you got a Democratic governor in there, you were able to force some changes, and now look what happened, right?
Yeah, and also the state Supreme Court, you know, redrawing the map.
Yeah, right, and so the fact that Democratic governors took over in Michigan and Wisconsin, I think, is important, too, because those were also gerrymandered states, and now those governors will have seats at the table when the redistricting happens for the next decade, and they'll be able to veto, you know, these bad maps and help try to move the House towards a much more fairer balance.
Yeah.
You know, the gerrymandering really did have an effect. One guy told me that he thought that it cost Democrats, one expert I spoke to for my book said that he thought it cost Democrats 12 seats. And that's not nothing. And others have thought estimated it as higher. And so I think we're actually going to see a bit of an unwinding of some of these gerrymanders now. And that plus the fact that felon enfranchisement was instituted in Florida and automatic voter registration in Michigan and reforms like that, I think incrementally kind of chip away at the counter-majoritarian dominance of Republicans and slowly move us in a better direction.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, I've been saying for weeks now, you know, the first thing that when the Democrats take the House back, the first thing they have to do is they have to investigate all of the voter theft that went on. And I know people call it suppression or, misappropriation of resources. But, you know, somebody's got to look at the thousands and thousands of instances of, hey, we ran out of ballots. Oh, we didn't have cords for the machines. Oh, well, we changed the polling. Oh, we kicked hundreds of thousands of people off the rolls. I mean, Georgia is the test case for every horrible thing you could possibly do. And still, Abrams only lost by what, like 64,000 votes?
Yeah, I mean, that was just extraordinary. I mean, they're so brazen about it. Having the candidate oversee his own election is just an amazing thing, and it just sort of really typifies what today's Republican Party has become, which is really something I write a lot about in the book, how that happened and how bad it is.
Well, let's talk about the book for a minute, because I'm hoping people will pick it up. We need more voices preaching sanity. Of course, the book, An Uncivil War, Taking Back Our Democracy in an Age of Trumpian Disinformation, and Thunderdome Politics. I'm sure you can pick it up at Amazon, as you can pick up everything. Tell me about it. How do we overcome Trump's, because I think he's a genius with social media. I think he's incredibly adept at dominating the news cycle. I'm curious, how do you overcome that?
Well, I mean, I propose a bunch of different things in there. I talk mainly about some of the structural problems with our democracy that sort of predate Trump, right? But that Trump has really kind of pivoted onto and exacerbated in many ways. I suggest various ways to fight back against voter suppression, against gerrymandering, against the flood of disinformation that is really polluting our politics in a horrible way. I talk about the fact that the press is really, I think, responding to Trump fairly aggressively and in a positive and salutary way. It's we're in a tough spot, but I think we have to feel better after yesterday.
Yep.
I think things are going to move in a better direction now. It's hard to imagine that, especially after what happened today with Trump pushing out his attorney general and installing a loyalist in his place. But I think, you know, this is obviously, we've still got a long way to go, but at least Democrats have some power and can really start pushing back and exercising real oversight over this presidency and really putting a check on his out-of-control behavior and cruel policies, hopefully.
Yeah, but, you know, here's the thing that bothers me. I mean, I think the Washington Post pointed out that, you know, over the last 7 weeks, you've had this president who's averaged 30 lies a day. And you go, how is it that, you know, in this country, we can't, you know, come around to the reality that the guy lies so often? I mean, my grandfather always said there's some people who would lie when the truth would be better. Here he is.
Yeah, but and I also think it's worth saying that the lying is almost strategic. He seems to be, it's quasi-totalitarian in nature. This is an argument I make in the book. He's essentially trying to just exhaust us and wear us all out with all the lying.
Yep.
To the point where everybody just gives up on the possibility of shared facts. He's also really trying to neutralize the institutional role of the press in our democracy, both through the relentless lies and also through the nonstop vicious and attacks on reporters, which he did again today. I don't know if your listeners saw today's press conference, but
yeah,
if you can stomach it, it's worth a watch. It's really an extraordinary performance of the American president. He was really incredibly abusive towards two black reporters. He accused one of them of being racist or asking a racist question. It was really something.
What do you call it? Jim Acosta rude and...
enraged at Acosta, and then one reporter asked him about his statement that he's a nationalist, and pressed him on whether he was actually tacitly embracing white nationalism by saying that, which we all know he was doing.
Certainly.
And he lashed out at this reporter who's black and said, "That's a racist question." Now, that's appalling behavior from a U.S. president, because what that does is it sends a signal to white nationalist and alt-right groups. It's an emboldening thing. When they see him push back like that and call the person calling out the white nationalism the racist, that's an emboldening message to a lot of these extreme groups.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I mean, you know, Trump's just saying out loud what the Republican Party has been for a very long time. And I mean, you look at this election cycle, there's been a ton of that, you know, just overt racism. There's just so much of it. I mean, one of my favorite stories from yesterday was the woman down in Texas who was talking to a black woman, said, "What, do I have to put on blackface for you to understand?" And you go, what is it with the Republican Party and blackface? I don't get it. How does that get between your ears?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, one thing about this election that was really incredibly dispiriting and also makes the Democratic victory so sweet is that the party went all in with his closing strategy of painting these destitute migrants hundreds of miles away as a national emergency. You had ads running around the country painting undocumented immigrants as criminals and invaders. You had really disgusting race-baiting messaging directed at candidates like Antonio Delgado up in New York, who won in a tough race. The party just went to a place that's so awful to contemplate. And this was all party-wide. I mean, you know, after this guy, after a deranged man allegedly shot up and killed 11 people in a synagogue, someone who raged about the conspiracy of, on the part of Jews to undermine America with refugees, Trump kept on floating the George Soros conspiracy theorizing, and so did other Republicans.
Yeah.
I mean, this behavior is just incredible from a major political party in this country. It's amazing that we've come to this.
But again, I come back to the you know, we're two very separate Americas, because look, that message resonated with their base. I can't tell you how many people I've met who, you know, they've grabbed onto that message. It's all about the fear. It's all about the, you know, the demagoguery. It's all about the, you know, treating those people as less than human. You know, it plays to the base, and they know their base. So, you know, I guess it. You know, I guess when you look at the messaging from each side of the political aisle, they know who their bases are.
Well, what does that say about the Republican base? That stuff excites them so much, huh?
Well, it says we're in big trouble, which is why, you know, I think your book, I'm hoping people will take a look at it, An Uncivil War, Taking Back Our Democracy in an Age of Trumpian Disinformation and Thunderdome Politics. I'm hoping people will take a look at it and maybe get an idea. Any thoughts going forward? And, you know, I'm hoping nobody goes home. I'm hoping the organizing continues and the energy continues as we ramp up for 2020, which the map looks a lot better and a lot more doable come 2020. Any thoughts?
Well, I agree that one of the big questions going forward is whether the energy dissipates after this victory. There's a real tendency after electoral victories like this one for people to think that a semblance of normalcy has been restored. But Trump immediately reminded us today with his crazy behavior at the press conference and his firing of Sessions that there's no normalcy. We're headed for some very tough, I think, you know, House Democrats are going to have to really go to war with this guy.
Yeah.
And I really hope that everybody remains engaged. I know it's exhausting and dispiriting and all, but this is not resolved. It's going to get really, really pretty rough in the next couple of years.
No, now is the time more than ever to stay engaged and to stay focused and continue to organize and continue
Absolutely.
To build on what I think the Democrats did really well in this election cycle, which was to build infrastructure that they've never had in places where they never fought before. I'm thrilled to see them fighting, and I hope that continues, because I've often said, you know, the Democrats are, you know, the party of, you know, if there's a street fight, they'll offer to hold your coat. I'm glad they're willing to get into the mix. So
well,
there you
they
go.
They sure did this time, and I agree 100%. It was great to see.
Good stuff. Greg, I appreciate the time. Love to have you come back and talk to us again sometime.
Anytime. Would love to.
Good stuff. Greg Sargent. Make sure you check out the book, An Uncivil War, Taking Back Our Democracy in an Age of Trumpian Disinformation and Thunderdome Politics. Make sure we'll get links out to make sure that you can get a copy of that. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.